You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. Today, we're going to be talking about lots of things from farming to corn to many other things that relate to the Alaska Farm Bureau. And we have a couple of representatives from the Bureau here with us today, Marie Rice and Lon White. So before we get into your backgrounds, and they're extensive here in Kodiak, could we talk a little bit about the Alaska Farm Bureau and its chapter here in Kodiak?
Okay. We have about 16 members here locally, and the chapter is part of the Alaska Farm Bureau, which is also a part of the American Farm Bureau. So we're a group that basically is here to expand and agriculture and enrich people's lives who are involved in agriculture. That's basically our mission in the area. And we all have different levels of expertise. Not all of us are farmers. In fact, there's only a few of us that probably would call themselves farmers. But there are greenhouse operators and hoop house operators and people who just like to grow things, and people who are involved in the school district who grow things like in the 4-H and FFA. So that sort of thing we get involved with. And we interface with particularly well, I think, with the local governments, because we can deal with local issues and we can deal with state issues and sometimes federal issues that come up concerning agriculture.
Right. And Lon, I know that among other things that you have grown, apples is one of them. Could you talk a little bit about some of the things you've done here in town, from the nursery to your own personal endeavors?
Okay. Well, I went to an agricultural school in New England where I came from to begin with, and I came to Kodiak and settled here after going to school in Fairbanks for 4 years there. And I started a small business in 1976, and we called it Strawberry Fields Nursery. And we were mostly growing houseplants in the beginning. We found that to be a pretty fruitless thing to do. So we changed operations and really went into growing bedding plants, and that's kind of been the principal core thing of what we do, is grow bedding plants for local gardeners. But in the meantime, of course, I've always had an interest in apples, so we have a number of apple trees there. And the apple trees now are quite a few years old, so I'm actually able to – I have more apples than what our family can eat, so we sell them at the local farmers market. So it's kind of a fun thing to do too. So,
yeah, and I don't know if you remember this, but back like last year when I was living with the Brodies, I actually came with Joanne Brody to your farm, and I got to taste one of the apples, and it was very crisp. It was delicious. So we can grow good produce given the right conditions here in Kodiak.
Yeah.
Marie, you have a long history here in Kodiak. We were talking about that a little bit before we started the show today. Can you give us a little bit of your history on the island?
A little bit. It stretches a long way. But I came to visit Kodiak in 1962. I was married to Omar Stratman then. And he had the Kodiak fever of coming here to ranch. And so we visited all of the ranches along the road system. And there were ranches every inch of the way on the road system. Joe Zentner, Pasagshack, Dave Henley at Kelson Bay. I could go through all the names of fields over in Anton Larson Bay. Even here on Near Island, Tommy Gallagher and his cattle and the Shetland ponies. And further out on Cherkov Island, the Russians placed cattle there, and they also had them on Kodiak Island. And there were cattle at Sitkanak and Sanak, and the Nixons had a dairy farm at Bell's Flats, and they were not operating an active dairy at the time, but we had the cattle actively around us. And learned how to do it all. I was teaching school and taking care of the other things that require with ranching, learning how to brand and do all those things and help with the delivery of calves and all. But their cattle have a little history here on Kodiak, right where we are. This was an agricultural experiment station right here where we're sitting. That barn that you all see out there right by the new library, that was part of it. And in some of the old photos, you'll see Mrs. Kraft's milk cow that wandered around the streets. And so in 1963, we purchased Dave Henley's ranch at Calson Bay, and later we purchased Joe Zentner's lease. So we had 50,000 acre of leases, and then we homesteaded, and we raised lots of cattle. We brought purebred Scottish Highland cattle to Kodiak, and we got up to, I think we were about 800 head of cattle. We had the Kodiak Ranchers Co-op slaughterhouse with state funding to help us with that, and so the ranchers could butcher there and sell inspected meat, and we sold to a lot of the local people, and we actually shipped two large shipments of beef to a market in Anchorage. So that was a big thing. And I was told I could have an electric organ when we got to 1,000 head of cattle, but we kept butchering. So that never happened. But, yes, I was involved with the agriculture community way back. And I grew up in Wyoming, Colorado, doing 4-H. So with some of the other local people, we started the 4-H Club back in about 1970. That's been an active part of my world. And then, of course, the starting of the Kodiak Rodeo and State Fair, and the Kodiak Stock Growers was a group that I think evolved into being the Kodiak Farm Bureau. And with much of the same mission. And it's good to see some of the things growing, continuing on the FFA programs at the school, and the Sustainable Kodiak movement with so many people growing. And I've been part of the Hoop House movement. I think we have over 60 hoop houses on Kodiak now, and I've got two of those, and so we grow and share with the public at farmers markets is a fun part of that. And then also we have community gardens going too, so yep, been there, have dirty fingernails most of the time.
We have a very lively agricultural scene here in Kodiak. And if you had told me that so long ago we would have had so many cows and cattle, I would never have believed it. Although we do have some now out the road. Could you talk a little bit about how that's changed, how the agricultural scene has changed? Because it seems like we had a lot of cows in the past.
Yes, we did. And with the coming in of the native land claim, and the villages were able to select lands that were within the leases for the ranches. That changed that pretty much along the road system. So that was a big change in available public land. And I remember, and some of the tide has kind of turned on other things. We actually had a fish and game employee that would come help us get those bear. And now they're pretty sacred animals. And we fed lots of bear with our animals there. But there's availability of land is probably the biggest change on that.
Yeah, that's interesting because it's availability across the board as far as residences go, as far as farming land goes. It's all kind of a struggle at this point.
Right.
So, like lawn, you are a grower. You grow things. You mentioned before we began speaking on the show that you have grown corn.
Oh, yeah, we always have to. And that's when people first come to Kodiak, you know, they're inquiring of us, you know, what can we grow here? They always want to grow corn. And I have tried it outdoors, and it needs a little help. And we have done it where we cribbed around it to kind of, it was open on top. But in one of my hoop houses, I dedicated an area to growing corn. And it gets tall. And things I learned from an agronomist that visited us is that corn is not self-fertile. And all those little silks that you see on the corn, each one of those has to be pollinated by another corn plant. And so he showed me how you put the pollen into a bucket, mix it around, take a paintbrush, and paint the silks. And there's a lot of effort in making it successful. And it takes a lot of space, too. So I don't think it's not one of the ongoing things I grow.
Well, that's really interesting to find out, because all the times I've eaten corn, I've never really thought about what the annoying silky strands. I'm like, why are these here? And why must I be so diligent in removing them? But they turn out to be very important.
The wind does it up there in the field.
Really?
You know, so, yeah, when you contain things under a cover, you change the environment.
That's a very important consideration.
You can grow corn here. I mean, but it's got to be grown really in a greenhouse or a cover. But it eats up so much space in a greenhouse, it's not really a practical thing to have. I mean, if you just grow a whole greenhouse full of corn, you don't have considering the amount of things we like to eat. Yeah, it's not practical. It can be done, but it's not really a good greenhouse crop, yeah.
Sounds like you tried.
Yep, I did. I grew it 1 year very successfully. I had a lot of corn, but it was too much space taken up by it, so I never did that again. Yeah.
I remember one of our extension agents that we had, he said, you can grow anything you want to in Kodiak. It just depends on how much effort and money you want to put into it. So.
Yeah.
How did they taste? Were they sweet?
It was good. Good, okay. Sweet corn.
Very good.
Yeah. I had a fondness for sweet corn myself and kind of missed it, and that's kind of why I grew it. My brother and I, we used to grow corn in New England. We'd actually start boiling the water ahead of time so that it would be really fresh, and we'd run it and throw it in and cook it up, and it was always sweet. Yeah, so I can appreciate why people like it, yeah.
And is the sweetness determined by the type of corn you're planting?
Yes, it is, but also they've developed varieties now that keep the sweetness for a longer period of time. That's why in the grocery stores, the sweet corn is better than it used to be. It's a better development on the sweet corn. Yep.
Is that due to GMOs?
Not GMOs. No, just varieties that they selected that tended to hold the sugars longer instead of turning to starch. They switch back and forth. Yeah.
And what other crops or kind of experimental strains have you tried to grow and either found successful or found that it's not the best fit for Kodiak?
Lonnie's going to talk about tomatoes. They're very successful. I don't work real hard on closing and my greenhouse doors at nighttime, which you need to maintain some of that night to captured warmth in there for that. So, but there are lots of successful tomato growers. But I grow indoors and outdoors both. And by doing broccoli, I can have those plants in the hoop house, have mature broccoli, and just then as I get that harvested pretty well, the ones in the outdoor crops are coming on. So we can push the envelope on the season with those. When we go to the farmer's market, the highly sought after thing and the easiest to grow is kale, kale, kale. And people do lots of creative nutritional things with that. Kale chips are probably the most fun. But, there are things, carrots are like gold as their color at the farmer's market. Mm. That's the thing that people really seek. And those are a little later in the season if they're grown outdoors especially. And we have quite a variety of things that we can do.
Yep. Yeah. And I grow a lot of tomatoes in my greenhouse because and zucchinis and cucumbers. So they do take longer to get there, but they're a big hit at the farmer's market.
How do you grow a good tomato?
Well, I usually grow my tomatoes in a large 5 gallon or bigger pot, and just keep them watered and keep them well fertilized. And you have to actually tap the tomato plants in order to get them to pollinate themselves. So because they're outside, there are insects and wind that move it. So inside the greenhouse, you don't have that motion or the insects. So you have to tap the plants to keep them to get them pollinated. And I usually do that right about until the 1st of August. And any fruit, it seems, that sets after the 1st of August is generally going to be green fruit late in the year. So I kind of quit the 1st of August. So I usually don't have any fruit to throw away. I used to have a lot of green tomatoes years ago when I kept on pollinating through all of August. And I found it wasn't worthwhile doing that. So
I found it amazing, though, those green tomatoes. You bring them inside. I used to wrap them in newspaper. And goodness, I'd have them clear through Thanksgiving because they would then slowly ripen. But not as good as the ones that ripened in the greenhouses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that there are different growing seasons for different vegetables.
Right.
Are there any vegetables still in the growing phase, or is it kind of done for the year?
Yes, there's spinach particularly. There's a lot of people around that grow spinach through the winter here. Mm-hmm. And although it doesn't grow much through the winter, what's that little bit that stays alive comes springing up strong in March once the light comes back. And so that's kind of been a new development, having spinach around. And there's a number of people that grow leeks later on in the through the winter, too.
And I've got lots of kale.
Yeah,
there.
Kale will hang on for a long period of time. Yeah, it takes a lot of frost and does well. And kale is a great food to have.
Right. And one thing that I've done, just to see what I could do for year-round, I'm tired gardening when fall comes, so I don't really work at keeping things growing. But in the hoop houses, we can do hoop houses, low hoop houses within the hoop houses, and that gives double protection. So for Valentine's Day, it's fun to see, you know, what things we have alive and that we can use in there then. But it depends on what the outside weather is doing. It's been very mild the last few winters, so we've had quite a bit of survival in there. Carrots and things like that can stay in the ground.
You mentioned Valentine's Day. Why that day in particular?
Oh, just choosing kind of the middle of the winter time to have for your Valentine's dinner fresh spinach with other things that you can harvest in there. But
isn't that amazing? Yeah. Instead of chocolate, we're like, vegetables, yes!
Yeah.
Our favorite thing here in Kodiak, our rare treat.
Yep. And there's a number of people that also grow celery right through the winter. There's a lot of almost microclimate types of things that go on in a greenhouse that different people have different locations, and they can do things that the rest of us couldn't do. In Bell's Flats, for example, I'm, you know, in the shadow of a mountain out there in the wintertime. I really can't do a lot there. But my greenhouse in town here, I can keep spinach going there all through the winter. It's pretty neat, yeah.
And that's the nursery greenhouse?
Yeah, yeah. I keep a little spinach growing there for my family. So, yeah, it's neat. The microclimates are in this town are very, very distinct and different. But Monashka Bay is quite a cool area, and the town is almost a different zone. It's particularly where they're facing the sun, getting the full sun. This hillside here around, it would be a beautiful spot to grow things all winter long, actually. And Bell's Flats is cooler than town is, yeah.
Is that an Alaskan phenomenon, or is that something that happens everywhere?
Well, it's an Alaskan phenomenon, but it does go on everywhere. So it's more extreme here. Yeah, right.
And for Bell's Flats, we have those mountains that don't let that sun get down to have much warming during the daytime. So that's one of our factors.
Yep.
Will the community gardens continue through the winter?
We actually have had people kind of put them to sleep, though we've allowed those that are perennials in there to continue on. But and especially if someone's not going to do the spot again the next year. So we're learning as we go. There could be some carryover there, but low hoops kind of get blown pretty bad eventually there. So I don't think we actually have any very active carry-through gardens there. But we do have 24 beds, and people can sign up for those through the Soil and Water Conservation District as the parent group there. Yeah.
And how are you guys involved? How is the Alaska Farm Bureau involved in organizing that?
Well, there's a lot of Farm Bureau members that are both in the Soil and Water Conservation District as well as the Farm Bureau. And so we're always exchanging ideas back and forth. And we've given them some financial support and things that they wanted to build. But mostly it's been led by the Soil and Water Conservation District and the city. Yeah, the city land there.
Yeah, and there's some issues that we all share. So and the Farm Bureau kind of looks at the from the legislative end a little more, having things that are agriculture friendly. And so with the cross section of all those agricultural groups, we've kind of looked at ag friendly codes, and with the Bureau code reviews and all that, we've put lots of effort in that. And you can't satisfy everyone, but a lot of efforts have been put in place there.
Yeah, the Soil and Water Conservation District really is a quasi-government group, and they're dependent on government funding. And so they really can't lobby on their own, while the Farm Bureau, we can actively lobby because we're not part of any government at all. So that's one of our big differences between the two.
Yeah, and the Water and Soil Conservation District is struggling right now. They didn't receive any borough assembly funding. So,
or state funding, yeah.
Or state funding. So their future is a little bit questionable at the moment.
And we don't have cooperative extension agents that we used to have that just really were wonderful in helping, you know, the individual people with the know-how and that. And, you know, cutting back on funds has been a big thing. And so we share a few of the cooperative extension people from around the state. But, we could use more of that sort of help.
And nevertheless, the Alaska Farm Bureau is still functioning and going on. And I understand you have a 6 p.m. meeting tonight.
Right. Yes, we do.
We're going to meet at Marie's house.
Yeah.
And my wife is going to bring a salmon dish, which is combined with Marie's kale. So it's going to be a nice casserole.
I suddenly feel this urge to get into farming. Maybe I'll
dish.
You might see me there. I do like salmon.
You are welcome to come. Yeah. Fresh red salmon. Fresh frozen.
Fresh frozen. Fresh enough to be frozen. What are some of the items on your agenda? What's the project that's the most striking?
Well, right now, we just got back from an annual meeting, the state Alaska Farm Bureau meeting, and there was a big push to try to support and keep the Mount McKinley Meats, which was the slaughterhouse in Palmer, going. And so that was one of the big things that the Farm Bureau actually financially got behind to support them, as well as talking about wanting to keep that state facility going. We're backing that facility. So that's a really big deal for all Farm Bureau members in the state.
All right. So we have 1 minute, or essentially 30 seconds left. So thank you both for coming onto the show and sharing your insight and some of your hopes for next summer, or some of my hopes for next summer, will be related to some of the vegetables that you just mentioned. Should I get started on them now, or is that something...
A little early.
A little early? I like to, it's almost summer. I like to stay optimistic about that.
But you can look at the seed catalogs.
Yeah, look at the seed catalogs and think about March. Mid-March is a good time to get serious.
Yes. I'll keep it by my bedside and think, summer, seeds, can do this.
Yes, we're happy to share ideas. There's a lot of people willing to help. So,
all right.
Yeah.
And you're on Facebook?
No.
Well, something to think about
individually,
then.
Individually. Yeah, we aren't from the Farm Bureau. We should do that, Lonnie.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you. This was fun for us.